Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here. We got a sort of full studio today.
We do again. We have a good one, though. This is a good show.
We're going to be talking about the Verde River and the impact it has on our valley here, the Verde Valley. And this is a local issue, but the issue of water, as if any of you have watched the information about Flint and everywhere else, the issue of water and the vitality of the communities that need water is extremely important, and it's now becoming not only a national issue but internationally very important. So, Mike, Gary, you guys want to introduce our guest today from the Verde River Partnership?
Absolutely. We got Brent Bitz. A lot of you folks out there know him from the Verde River Basin Partnership. We are going to address, and I don't want to always say it in the next breath, but we will talk about the other sibling river organizations. But Brent's going to tell us about himself, and he's going to talk about this organization. Go ahead, Brent.
Well, first of all, I want to thank everyone for having me here this morning. It's a real pleasure to be on CASM Radio. The Verde River Basin Partnership was formed in 2005, really by Senator McCain in response to a desire by the community, both here in the Verde Valley and in the Prescott area, for a need for a collaborative body of organizations to work on river issues. And the partnership really is a nonprofit, scientific, and educational organization who's dedicated to raising awareness among our community leaders and the citizens about the workings and limitations of the Verde River Basin's groundwater and surface water and the life they support. And in 2010, we became a 501c3, so we're a nonprofit, and we're entirely funded by donations and private foundations. Our members are really an organization of organizations. Our members include federal agencies such as the National Park Service, the Bureau of Reclamation, the U.S. Geological Survey. Locally, all the cities in the Verde Valley are members, Sedona, Cottonwood, Clarkdale, Camp Verde, Jerome, et cetera. We have state agencies like the State Land Trust, and we have a number of other non-agency members such as Northern Arizona University and the Sierra Club, Ditch Association. So we're really an organization of organizations working on the water issue.
And that's great. I mean, anybody, the more familiar you get with river issues, the more important it is to have, especially these government and quasi-government organizations, have some forum that they can compare notes and organize efforts go in the same direction. But bottom lines here, the Verde River is in trouble. Any place that has a developing population and a demand on, especially in the Southwest, on a relatively very limited amount of water, like the Verde, is going to be under threat. So we're going to talk about the threats to the Verde. Brent Bitz is going to talk about the threats to the Verde this morning. He's going to talk about some of the positive things, too, some of the things that people are doing. There are, we've alluded to his organization and other river organizations that that are doing positive things, and including right here in Sedona, some things to help. It's tributary of the Verde Oak Creek.
I think it might be good to mention, before we get too far into it, the website for the Verde River Basin Partnership. It's vrbp.org. V as in Victor, rbp.org.
Well, thank you very much, because in addition to the various members that I had just mentioned. We have over 1,200 supporters who have signed up for our regular email blasts, our quarterly newsletters. So, and we have monthly meetings that are open to the public. So I don't want those who are listening to come away with the misunderstanding that we're somehow just a quasi-governmental organization. In fact, we're a community organization that really welcomes the participation of everyone who lives in the Verde River Basin.
Great point. I did characterize it as at least that place where those other government and quasi-government organizations can come together, and that's important. I know that, anyway, we're going to move forward here because the histories, I did mention that I did a story when I was a reporter in 2007, and there were 17 river organizations, and I listed them all. And then some of them are coming in and out of existence, which is still happening, I guess, to some degree. But I believe it's down to at least four or five serious ones, or at least ones that have a mission. And we're not going to sort those out this morning, I don't think, unless we have the time. We want to talk about what the Verde River Basin Partnership
is. So we have this absolutely beautiful river, and we always encourage folks to get out on the Verde River.
You know, my
kayak, canoe, just go down and have a picnic by the river. Some of the things that we heard is that a whole lot of people in the Verde Valley never spend any time by this beautiful river.
My stat is that 85% of the people that live in this valley have never been in, on, or at the Verde River.
Well, actually, you've raised a really important point, because what you're saying is absolutely true. The history behind the river, of course, is that in the late 1800s, when European settlers first moved here, much of the land was then acquired by agricultural interests, you know, farmers and ranchers, and their descendants today own a lot of that land, so it is still in private hands. It's not accessible to the public. But I would point out two really interesting developments that really go right to the point that you're mentioning. The first is in Clarkdale, and over the last few years, Clarkdale has developed a river access point up
Lower Tapco.
Lower Tapco and near Tuzagoot National Monument, where they have made it really a city park that allows people to take their kayaks, canoes, etc., into the river. They've got a number of private companies that are providing rafting services. And at the other end of the Verde Valley, the city of Camp Verde has just approved a river recreation plan, which is unique, actually, to them. And their plan, which literally was just approved a couple of weeks ago, is intended to work with private landowners along the Verde River in an effort to both provide access to the public and protect the private landowners from the abuse that some people have unfortunately been doing by abusing the private lands that people have. So this actually is the beginning of a whole new way of looking at river access. Our communities through the leadership in Clarkdale and Camp Verde and also Cottonwood are really to be commended for that. I think we're going to see more access as the time
moves
forward.
Real quick, Clarkdale's development of that public access, and it's a beautiful, beautiful spot. Cottonwood is had their jail trail for a long, long time, but are improving it, and they put up a great big iron. And I'm laughing because it's a little grand. It's a very grand sign called Gateway to the Verde River. Next time you're driving through Old Town Cottonwood, there at the tea house and right across from the pizza place, you will see great Gateway to the Verde River.
It's a really nice little hiking trail, and mm-hmm. I recommend, I've done it several times. It's a great place to hike. It's a great place to take your dog down to the river and swim.
And then of course, you know, there's all of Dead Horse State Park that has lots of public access.
But, so we have this beautiful river. What you said earlier when we were talking before the show that the river is under a threat. What's the threat to this beautiful river that's been the lifeblood not only of the settlers, but if you look along the river, there are ruins everywhere from the people who lived here before any Europeans ever arrived. And they use the river for everything, for hunting, fishing, irrigation.
Well, first of all, perhaps it might be useful for the listeners to realize that the Verde River is the longest free-flowing perennial river left in Arizona. And that is an unfortunate tragedy in one sense and a wonderful blessing for those of us who live in the Verde Valley and in northern Arizona. Because if you were to go down to Tucson as recently as the 1950s, the Santa Cruz River that flowed through Tucson was actually perennial. But if you go there now, all you'll see is a dry wash riverbed. And the thing that the Verde River Basin Partnership is concerned with is that future, the way that the Santa Cruz River has been destroyed by the overuse of water resources by the good folks in the Tucson area, could easily happen to the Verde River here in the Verde Valley.
The river could literally dry up or only run part of the year?
Well, I think it's important for your listeners to understand a little bit of hydrology. If I could branch into that, I promise that I won't bore people with too many statistics.
We love talking about hydrology. We've been looking for a hydrology speaker for some time.
Well, I appreciate at the risk of having a pun that it's a somewhat dry subject. But but in fact, the fundamental fact is that groundwater and surface water are connected in a hydrologic sense. In the same way that the air that you and I breathe is connected to each other, the surface water in the Verde River, which is the water that flows through the Verde that we see on a daily basis, is intimately and directly connected to groundwater. And the fundamental point here is that all of us who live in the Verde River Basin, which includes everyone in the Verde Valley, plus all the folks who live in the Prescott area and what is called the Big Chino area, north and east of Prescott, all of our water comes from groundwater. Many people think that the water we drink, that we get out of our taps, actually comes from the river, but that is not the case. Literally, all of the water that people consume for their home use, restaurant use, business use, comes out of wells that tap into the groundwater. The water that we see in the Verde River is actually owned, if I can use that phrase generally, by people who have water rights, which is a very limited group of people. It's primarily some of the farms and ranches that have historical rights dating back to the 1800s that are right adjacent to the river. But more importantly, the bulk of it is really owned by the Salt River Project, which I can come back to.
According to an article in the Verde Independent written by Andy Grossetta in 2011, there are 42 ditch organizations in and around the Verde Valley. That number is, for some people, was shocking. We all know six or seven major ditch organizations. Now, some of those are three and four families that got together, as Brent was saying, you know, maybe 100 years ago and formed a ditch association and managed to maintain that.
Explain the ditch association.
Just people coming together to use the irrigation.
In other words, it's flood irrigation. It's digging a ditch and redirecting the water, right?
Well, first of all, you have to go back to the issue of surface water rights in Arizona. And basically, it's first in time, first in right. And what that means is that if people's ancestors had the first utilization of the water, and this typically in this part of the world dates back to the late 1800s, that land maintains that right going forward. And so that's why you referred to the ranchers and the farmers who came here at that time. It is also very appropriate to mention the Yavapai Apache Nation, who have an unresolved surface water claim on the Verde River. That's something that they're working on. And, of course, that's a large, complex issue, a topic onto its own. But those people who have those water rights have the right to utilize the surface waters of the Verde River. But if we then look at the issue of groundwater, because going back to the question that you had raised, Mike, here in the Verde Valley, in the 1950s, there were 228 wells in the Verde Valley. And SRP did a study, and in 2011, there were 6,436 wells in the Verde Valley itself.
Wow, that is amazing.
Plus an 11,800 wells in the Prescott area. Now, the reason that I really wish to emphasize this is the point that I made that surface water and groundwater are connected. And the bottom line is they're a single resource. And to the extent that you pump water out of a well and consume it, as we all do, ultimately that is water that is not getting to the Verde River itself. And it's important to understand that with the exception of the water that flows during the heavy rain episodes, such as during the winter time when we have winter storms, or snow that is falling primarily on the Mogollon Rim, or monsoons, which then augment the flow in the river itself, the rest of the year, the bulk of the flow of the river comes from groundwater that is seeping into the river itself, sometimes through springs that we've all seen, or just in an imperceptible way seeping through the ground into the river and then draining and flowing down towards Phoenix. And the important thing for this point to be made is that all the wells that I just mentioned are reducing the groundwater. I'm sure that you have heard both here in the Verde Valley and in the Prescott area about well levels dropping.
And certainly the old-timers are complaining about their wells going dry and having to redig them and so forth and so on. So I've heard of, I don't know, a dozen cases, Mike, of that happening.
Well, what has this is a really important point. And the Verde River Basin Partnership, a couple of years ago, obtained funding to hire the U.S. Geological Survey to investigate the human impact on the Verde River. And the U.S. Geological Survey, which really is the gold standard for water management studies and resources in the American West, and indeed around the world, because it's such a well-thought-of organization, analyzed, using historical data, what the impact of those of us who are living here today, as well as our predecessors, has been on the Verde River, and then took that data and forecasted it going forward another 100 years. And if I could just speak historically for a moment, what came out of that study is that for the time all the way from the late 1800s until around the 1950s, the Verde River was really not impacted at all by human habitation. But after World War II, when the population started to increase and those wells increased from the 228 that I mentioned earlier to the 6,400 now, the base flow of the river, that is the minimum flow that exists year-round, has now declined permanently by between 12 and 14%.
What's a good flow? We know CFS. We don't know CFS. Well, the cubic feet per second, whether you know CFS or not, tell us what a good number is for the river to be flowing at.
Well, the rivers in Arizona really vary dramatically during the season. So it's almost impossible to give you the right answer in one statistic. And the reason is that during the end of the winter time, we hit the lowest level of our river flows as the storms pass through and they're gone. We enter the drier season, the snow melt up in the Flagstaff area has disappeared. We hit a low level, and then, of course, we get our monsoon seasons where the flows rise dramatically. So I think a better way of answering that question is to give you the following illustration. I mentioned that the Verde River Basin Partnership in part working with U.S. Geological Survey, analyze the historic impacts that we who are living here have on the river. And that was determined to drop the cubic feet per second, which is the standard measurement flow of water passing a point at any one time, by approximately 10 to 12 cubic feet per second. The study also then determined what the likely impact was going to be going forward. And this is really the point that I'm here this morning to make, because the Yavapai County Board of Supervisors, working in partnership with all the local communities a few years ago, did a study trying to determine what the population was going to be in 2050 and what the water needs of those people were going to be. After all, it's not like building a road where if a subdivision comes in, you can sort of just build a road fairly quickly. To the extent that people move here, you just can't create water out of thin air. And the study that Coconino County put together revealed that it is forecasted that the population is going to triple in the Verde River Basin by the year 2050. We currently have 200,000 people living here. The forecast is that by 2050, there'll be approximately 600,000 people living in the Verde Valley and in the Prescott area. So the question then became, well, where's that water going to come from for all of those people? And to the extent that it is being pumped out of the ground, just like we have been talking about, and that has then an impact on the river, what's going to happen to the river if we don't look at potential solutions? So in light of that, when you take that study that Yavapai County had produced and anticipate a population of 600,000 people, and you translate that into water usage, it is reasonable to expect that the total impact on the river would be in the neighborhood of 40 cubic feet per second of additional demand on the river year in and year out, because we all consume water every day.
So what demand's all going to be almost twice as much?
Absolutely. Twice as much as we currently have. So what does this mean to the river? I just mentioned that the flow of the river changes dramatically over the course of the year. Sometimes it is very high, as when we have a monsoon storm. But there are times of the year when the base flow of the river at the measurement gauge in Camp Verde is at 42 cubic feet per second. And what that means is that if all of this additional population comes and lives here over the decades to come, there will be days when the river is dry at Camp Verde.
Right. I've heard the river was dry in 2002. We had a dry few days. At least it stopped flowing, and that for a lot of people was a dry year. It was the summer, and we didn't have a monsoon. And there was at some point, not the entire river, that it was dry, and that had never happened, at least in modern memory. You know, if it happened, you know, back in the day, well, it wasn't quite so alarming. But so we've had that occurrence at least once. I think one of the purposes for the Verde River Basin Partnership and its all the other river organizations is so that doesn't happen. So that
how is this going to work? If we triple the population here, it would seem to first damage the whole valley, because it's not only the river water, it's the groundwater that would be taken, right?
Well, you're absolutely correct. If we continue essentially mining the resource, it's very much like a hypothetical trust fund that some person might have inherited. You can live off of it for a while. You keep using the money out of the bank account, but ultimately it disappears if the rate that you're taking it out is greater than the rate that it's being recharged naturally. And that's what's happening here in northern Arizona. The rate that we are taking water out of the aquifer, which is the water storage system under the ground, is greater than the rate that nature is recharging it. But to go to your point about what we might do, I think it's important to dispel one really critical myth that is pervasive in the community, and that is that our solution will be to import water from another area. So let's talk about that if we could. There's two areas of potential water supply that have been discussed. One is the Colorado River, and the second is the idea of desalination plants, possibly in the Sea of Cortez and working with Mexico. The fact of the matter is that the Colorado River already has more claims on the water in the river than the river itself can support. Those claims are far in excess of the long-term ability to provide additional water resources to northern Arizona. But let's just say hypothetically there was some water that was available for sale. Let's say someone who had a right in the Colorado River, such as perhaps some of the native Indian tribes in the Yuma area, were willing to sell it. We in northern Arizona, our little population of 200,000 people, would be in competition likely with the state of California, the city of Phoenix. And I don't think it's realistic to assume that we can outmuscle them financially or politically to obtain those rights. In addition to that, the cost of transportation would be enormous. In the Coconino Plateau, the people up there, including the city of Flagstaff, Coconino County, and the native tribes, have been working on an idea about a pipeline from Page through to the city of Flagstaff, which would also serve the water needs for the Navajo and Hopi Nation. This is an unresolved issue, but a preliminary study that they have concluded indicates that the pipeline alone would cost in excess of $1 billion, and that is for a pipeline that only goes from Page to Flagstaff, which is relatively simple topography to deal with in the grand scheme of things. So the message that I have to my fellow residents is, do we really believe that anyone is going to give us over $1 billion to build a pipeline? I doubt if the federal government would do that, given the financial limitations that it has. I doubt if the state will do that. After all, there's many other areas that have similar problems throughout the West. Right. So if we were to look for a pipeline in any fashion, it would cost us over $1 billion. And with regard to desalination plants, San Diego built one for its own needs. It cost over $700 million to build the plant. It costs $50 million a year to run the plant. San Diego is a very large city, had an absolute crisis on its hands, and its citizens elected to go down that route. But, of course, they have the Pacific Ocean right next door, so the costs that I mentioned do not include building a huge pipeline to take desalinized water the great distance.
It's also, you know, San Diego is now a huge, extremely prosperous and powerful city with a vibrant economy in about five different ways. So it's closer to being like Phoenix than it is to being like the Verde Valley in terms of its economic ability to do things.
Absolutely. I mean, we're a small community. And the Verde River Basin's partnership position is that no one is going to bail us out. We really have to live within our own means and deal with this problem ourselves. I think it is unrealistic to expect the federal government or the state government to come and wave the magic bank account wand and solve our problems for us. So our position is that we as a community working on a regional basis, because water is not like some resources. It is, in fact, a community resource shared by everyone, and to the extent that we in Sedona, and I live in Sedona, pump water that is water that's not available to our friends in Cottonwood or Clarkdale. It's not water that is available to the communities in Page Springs. So we're all in this together. Now, fortunately, there are solutions that we can work towards. Not any one of them is a silver bullet. Each of them would require some sacrifice or compromise in order to achieve this. But if we're to save the river and preserve the water resources for our children and for our grandchildren, and this is a problem that will occur not in my lifetime. I'm of an age where I'll be gone before the river becomes dry. But if we truly care about our grandchildren's future, we're going to have to start making the sacrifices today in order to do that.
Such as?
Well, for example, everyone's heard about rainwater harvesting. But in fact, unlike in places like in Australia, where it's mandatory for all new homes, all new commercial developments, we have not embarked upon the path of looking seriously at harvesting the rain as it falls onto the roofs of our buildings or onto our private property.
What's sad about that is that it's not particularly expensive to do when it's new construction. It's more expensive to retrofit a home with or a business with rainwater harvesting, but when you do it under new construction, it's really not that expensive.
But nobody wants to add to the price of a new home.
That's well, and this is the fundamental problem, Mike, that you've hit. Unless we are willing to make some modest sacrifices today, we will be bequeathing to our children and grandchildren a very serious problem.
Well, how much would, do we know how much rainwater would help?
Well, I think that I can't give you a specific percentage.
Right.
But I can list a series of solutions that, when added together, will help mitigate the problem substantially.
All right, what else you got?
Landscaping. We live in a desert, and I'm not from this part of the world originally, and it's easy to come here and say I'd love to have this plant, that plant, these flowers, but really all yards should have low water use landscaping off of drip irrigation, no spraying. The Arizona Water Company, which is the main water provider in Sedona, has indicated that well over half the water consumption during the summertime in Sedona is utilized for outdoor landscaping.
Wow.
When you consider that there's some beautiful plants that really could live without water at all, other than the natural water that comes from the skies,
yeah,
we could really eliminate that excess and, quite frankly, unnecessary demand on the system. Another potential solution, which I'm pleased to see some of our municipalities starting to embark upon, is the recharge of treated effluent. This is something that is happening more and more throughout water-challenged communities around the world. You simply can't let the water dissipate. And Sedona, in years past and still even to this day, had sprayed the water onto the land as you drive from Sedona to Cottonwood,
sure,
a complete waste. And to its credit, the city of Sedona is now injecting its treated effluent into the aquifer to recharge. And it's quite apparent that this will have not only a positive impact on the aquifer, but that both through the water treatment facilities that the city has, plus the natural, let's say, treatment effect of the earth itself, this leads to a relatively pure water resource that people can utilize.
Sure, sewer's job used to be, just in their defense, I guess, or in the cities, the municipalities, that used to be clean the water. I mean, you had wastewater. The city's job, or whosever job it was, the sewer district's job, depending on what form your wastewater treatment takes, your job was to clean the stuff. now the job is becoming, and it's, at least it's important, at least they've recognized, Sedona has, and other communities, that their job is also to try to recharge the aquifer, especially if they own or they manage the water resource for the community.
Well, in Phoenix, there's tremendous amounts of recharge that's being done in exactly this fashion. There's the phrase...
it doesn't go on a golf course. Maybe it goes back into an aquifer.
It goes into an aquifer. San Diego, there's the term toilet to tap, which sounds most unpalatable.
Yeah, really.
But in fact,
don't see a lot of enthusiasm in the studio for the toilet to tap concept.
One of the great ironies, I think, of this whole issue is that the water in the aquifers is the cleanest water on the planet by far. Yet we use that water to flush our toilets, to wash our cars, to irrigate and grow our plants. It makes no sense when there are means available with gray water capture. There's a little device that fits underneath a sink for $400 that will capture the water from a sink and transport it to your toilet to flush your toilet. $400.
You've raised a really interesting point. By way of example, we all know that the wine industry is burgeoning here in the Verde Valley. And Yavapai College has a wine program to raise new people to come into that industry, a great opportunity for our young folk. But the water that is utilized for their fields, their wine, grape fields in Yavapai College actually comes from the treated effluent that Cottonwood produces.
And even as I look at the stats, Brennan, we're getting close to the end here, but I look at who's using the water, and residential is a small part of that. We're talking commercial. We're talking agricultural. Those are the guys that are sucking the most water. So, in other words, I can put the units under my sink and put up rainwater harvesting and do all of that. And while I watch 80% of the water being used by agriculture or by commercial enterprises, then I'm wondering, my contribution is rather small. Not that it's not important.
One of the saddest things is that you have these big box stores in Prescott Valley and here in Cottonwood and elsewhere that have huge surfaces on the roof that with a simple, bit of rainwater harvesting could meet most of their needs for the bathrooms in the facilities, et cetera. And they don't do it. There is no movement to do that in the driest place on the planet.
I think the problem with rainwater harvesting, and I have one harvester at my house. I had to put in a great big plastic deal that harvests some of the water from the roof.
Good for you.
But it's complicated when you have an old house, and I have not been able to figure out. I guess I would have to hire someone how to collect the rest of the water and how to do gray water and stuff. But the difference between rainwater harvesting and all these conservation efforts is, and solar. When you get solar, you get a big discount on your electrical bill. But people are going to see rainwater harvesting as producing less for them personally. It's more of a sacrifice. It's more something that you're doing for the future for everybody else.
Well, you've actually hit the key point, Steve. The reality is that the issue of our water resources is a long-term one, where we're consuming essentially our children and grandchildren's inheritance. And if we wish to do that, that's one step. And we've seen that throughout the West
We should be honest with the children
and
grandchildren.
Right. And to the young children or young folk who are out there listening, I would say, encourage your parents to make some of the modest sacrifices necessary to preserve something for us. Other ideas beyond the low water use landscaping and the injection of treated effluent include the purchase of development rights to maintain conservation easements. So private landowners, completely within their rights to sell land for housing development. In some parts of the world, the communities have gotten together to purchase those development rights, to retain them for rural agricultural purposes so that we maintain the wonderful rural culture and character of northern Arizona. That could be done to prevent some of these long-term housing developments from impacting us. There also could be a legal recognition that groundwater and surface water is connected. And in that area, we would need our state legislature to do for rural Arizona what they have done for the major urban areas. In the 1980s, they brought forward some very thoughtful and effective land use planning efforts where these active management areas have to manage their water uses, and that's how Phoenix and Tucson have been able to grow in an effective, long-term, planned manner. Unfortunately, none of these tools were implemented across rural Arizona, and now in rural Arizona, including here in the Verde Valley, we're starting to see the consequences of that inaction. In other parts of rural Arizona, down in the Wilcox area, the residents there are now starting to petition the state government to consider various forms of creating management areas to prevent the long-term degradation of their water supplies because their wells are going dry.
Well, it's going to happen. The connection between surface and ground, as you said at the top of the show, groundwater and surface water are hydrologically connected. Legally in Arizona, they are not, at least to this point. And that's why Salt River Project, who owns all the surface water, shows up at most of the water meetings because sooner or later they know that they are going to be one of the ways of slowing water use is by making you pay for it. Those 6,000 wells will have a meter on them, and including mine, was dug in 1979, by the way, and has gone down 100 feet. So I have personal experience with this.
I want to point out another way to save water, and that's with solar and renewable energy, because production of electricity traditionally with coal plants or natural gas plants or whatever uses a great deal of water for cooling. And just, if every new home in Arizona, which has, sunshine how many days out of the year, put up solar panels, which would add about, $4,000 to the cost of the home, and put in a water capture system that would add maybe another, $2,000-$3,000 to the home when it's put in new, it would dramatically transform the state.
Why don't you give us the information for your website again, as for our listeners?
Well, our website is vrbp.org, and I would like to invite all of our listeners to our next meeting, which is on Tuesday, March the 1st at 10:30 a.m. in the Yavapai County Administration Building in Cottonwood. We have monthly programs of speakers, and this month, Dr. Gary Beverly will be speaking on the Upper Verde River, A Decade of Progress, talking about some of the good things that have occurred. And so it's not all doom and gloom. If we work together as a community, we can solve this problem.
Yes, absolutely. I have been to meetings with representatives from the Verde River Basin Partnership, the Verde River Valley Nature Organization, the folks that bring you the Bird Festival, and the we have a kayak and canoe race coming up in March, the Friends of the Verde Greenway. There's lots and lots of ways to get involved with preserving the Verde River.
We just touched on some of them.
And we
want to thank everybody for being with us today. And I think it's important for everyone who lives in the Verde River and people even tapping into the show as far as Texas and so forth and so on, to understand water issues.
All right. You can hear this show and all of our shows on Verde VVRD.org, VVID.org, Verde Valley Independent Democrats. .org has our podcast of this show and all our shows, folks. Please tune in. We got some great shows coming up. It is an election year. This is a political show. We're going to have lots of politics, lots of local politics coming up in 2016. Please tune in. Thank you.
And listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.